right, brethren, so as I get started, I'm going to start the message here off a little bit different than normal. I gave two individuals in here pieces of paper. Raise your hand real quick to give you paper. All right, Royston and Bob. What they're going to do, as I explain the message here in a second, they're going to go right now, you're going to make me a paper airplane. As fast as you can, you're being timed, you got to make a paper airplane as fast as you can. If you literally cannot make it, you can ask for help, but they can't do it for you. But go ahead now, you're being timed. So while they're doing that, I'm going to explain the rest of the message. So our message is going to have three major points to the message here. And this message is mainly about distinguishing the difference between a good person and a Christian. Are they the same? What's the difference? I'm sure we all know people that are good people out in the world. How do we know if they're Christians? I'm sure we know there's Christians, and they're not really good people. I'm sure we all know, we can name a few, right? And the second point is, what has God equally given each and every one of us? Yeah, each and every one of us have something equal in a world of diversity, of separation between people with all kinds of differences. God actually gave us a couple of things that are absolutely equal. We're going to go over that. And then the third point is, what does God specifically require from us if we're going to claim Christianity? And then during this message, I'm actually going to have a bunch of slideshow pictures to relate to the message points and what I'm talking about. So all of you, or most of all of you, will be able to see some pictures, and some of them have the scriptures on them that I will mention. So as of now, you have to stop building your airplane, whatever it is, whatever shape it is. What I want you to do right now is you are just going to throw it towards me. Ready, set, go. Nice, there we go. All right. Sorry for those seeing online that you couldn't see that. What did we all just witness right there? What did we all immediately look for? Who's did the best? Right? We all right away were like, oh, who's went the furthest, right? But what we probably didn't notice is that between the two of them, they both had the exact same amount of time randomly and the exact same amount of resource to pull off this random performance that I just put them on the spot for. There was no preparation, unless Bob, yours did a little bit better. Did you attend an elite paper airplane making school, the University of Paper Airplanes? No. No, right. So no one had any expert experience on building paper airplanes, so there was no one really had an advantage over the other. I gave them a task, a time limit, and a tool to work with to pull off this performance. So how does paper airplanes relate to the message, and how am I going to wrap this together? So here we go. When it comes to improving our relationship with God, improving our Christianity, we all have the same amount of time and resources. And I'm definitely going to explain what that means. When it comes to God and what he's given us, we have the same amount of time and resources. One does not have the advantage over the other. Say, for instance, time. You could say, well, I'm 90 years old, and you're 20 year old. You're 20 years old. You have way more time than I do. It seems that way from our point of perspective, assuming that that person that's 20 is going to make it to 90, but our time isn't guaranteed. Our next moment isn't guaranteed. So from God's perspective, we all have the same amount of time, whether you're 20 or you're 90, because our time isn't guaranteed. We only have this moment right here. We only have this moment to make the right choice. We only have this moment to believe. To God, our time, whether you're 90 or 20, he gave us all the same amount of time, which I believe is why Christ says, the time is now, in 2 Corinthians 6:2. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. But the time is for us to do what? Do what with it? What do we do with the time? By saying now is the day of salvation, it must mean that now is the time to get busy with the time that we have been given. Get busy, use our resources to become more and more Christ-like. When it comes to our resources, we all have the exact same amount of resources that God gave us to be a good person and to be a good Christian. So what am I talking about with resources? How can I say that we all have the exact same amount? So as a good person, to do good things for ourselves, to do good things for the people around us in our community, to do good things across the world, to say you wanted to participate in that, are all the resources the same? If you wanted to take part in doing good things for good people in other parts of the world, are the resources the same? Absolutely not. From global disparities to income equality to access to basic needs to geographical issues, the available resources are in no way even close to being the same. But even still, with that major, unbelievably hard challenge of the resources are not the same across the world, there are so many good organizations and people across the planet pulling as much as they can together to help people and make the world a better place. There's a ton of organizations and people doing that, even with the difficulty. Which to me is just incredible, the devotion and dedication people have to do good in the world. But the resources are not the same. Now, as Christians, are our resources the same? Do we have the same resource as Christians? Well, it depends on what we're looking at. If we're looking at material sources, then no. We do not have the exact same amount of resources as one another. Like, for instance, here in the U.S., we absolutely have a lot more resources than Christians in other parts of the world. If you want to read and study the Bible and get to know the history of God more, just simply get out your phone and pull up the app and done. Other parts of the world cannot do that at all, not even with the Bible. But what I'm referring to is, what resources did God equally give us all? I already mentioned time, because we're all on his clock that he designed. But what is the other resource that he gave equally to all of us? Choice. He gave us the ability to choose. Our free will, as we know it is. He gave us the ability to become our own people, have our own personalities, find our own path, even if it's not with him, and he still loves us for it. But he gave us this because it comes with a huge responsibility and a price. This leads me to my struggle with the interpretation or the saying that you hear, what makes us Christian? What exactly is Christian? What is a Christian? What are they supposed to be like? What are they supposed to act like? What makes us Christian? A lot of interpretations that I've heard across the world growing up, across social media, is that Christianity is that Christians are automatically good people. If you're a Christian, that means you're automatically good. I'm going to assume that you're a good person. Just because we claim to follow Christ with the understanding that we can see, that alone doesn't make us a good person. So many times I hear, well, I'm a Christian, so I have to love you. Or I'm a Christian, so I have to forgive you. So I'm going to forgive you because I'm a Christian. Or a more dangerous fumble that people use is, well, I'm a Christian, so I can see things that you can't see. And because I have God on my side, I'm probably right. But I've come to realize that we're not supposed to really do anything. We don't have to do anything. We all have the same ability to choose whether or not we're going to make the good choice. So you don't have to love someone because you're a Christian. Good people who do not follow Christ do that all the time. You do not have to forgive someone because you're a Christian. Good people who do not follow Christ do that all the time. Christianity isn't about being a good person. Christianity is about God's unfailing love saving a hopeless, broken and sinful people. So should we still strive to do good things in the world that help people and please God? Yeah, I would think so. But we should recognize that these things, even from the heart, do not author our redemption, even though they're good. We should recognize that these acts are expressions of genuine love, both as a good person and a reflection of a spiritual transformation, but they are not the cause of it. We should recognize that Christianity doesn't come from us being a good person, but it comes from the one true God who is working within us. As both people and as Christians, we have the choice to love, to forgive, to have compassion, to be charitable, to help people improve their lives, or not do any of that. You have the choice. If we are going to answer the call and follow Christ, God only requires two foundational things that we must develop. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all of the law and prophets. As simple as just two great commandments look, we can fumble these two miserably. Why does Christ highlight the importance of these two commandments so much? Because God gave us the exact same amount of time and resources. Any moment could be our last, and any choice could be our last. That's why these are so important. That's why our faith as a Christian isn't about our resources or how much good we think we can do. It's about this. It's about what we do with God, with what God gave us. We have the moments that matter to God. Because when the moment comes and the choice comes, will we drop all of it and still follow Christ? Now, I cannot speak for when I say we all have the same amount of time and we all have the same amount of resource of choice from God. I can't really speak for those who are born or not born without time or the choice of or the sort resource of choice. Those who are so mentally disabled that their mind doesn't allow them to live in the same perspective of time and choice like we do. When I say God gave us all the same amount of time and resource, I have to think about those little lives that are taken way too soon or lost way too soon, and those whose mental health isn't there. What about their time? What about their ability to choose? When I say God gave us all that, what about theirs? Other than a few scriptures that I'm going to turn to, all I know is this. God doesn't reveal everything to us. I would like him to, but I think he doesn't because, honestly, we can't handle the truth we have now. How are we going to handle or misconstrue more truth? And I'm not going to say things that invent a whole new condition of salvation, like, oh, because they were innocent, they were automatically saved. I'm not really going to say that. I'm not in the position to say that. And for me to say that, I'm actually overriding and completely discarding Christ's sacrifice, because his sacrifice was for mankind's sin, not for our innocence. So I'm not going to jump on that. In my mind, if I were to say the innocent are automatically saved, then God has a lot of contradicting explaining to do. Let's start, just for an example, with all the firstborn children of Egypt that were slain by the death angel that God sent. little ones from moments old to 6 months old to 2 years old. How about them and their innocence? If the innocent is automatically saved. Or how about the innocent children that were more than likely wiped out in Sodom and Gomorrah, in that evil city? As horrible as the death of any child is, it sounds like God is giving them a free ride to the kingdom if we just say that the innocent are automatically saved. If the innocent are automatically saved, then God has a lot of contradicting explaining to do, which that sentence doesn't even make sense. All I know is that this subject and issue is where at least my physical mind ends and spiritual faith begins. Because we don't have the information. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 2 and verse 8, we'll turn there. Ephesians 2 and verse 8 says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith and not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone boast." Which means to me that no one is born a believer. It's a gift from God. It's His choice. And in Isaiah 55, 8 through 9, I'm just going to read number 8 here. I'm just going to read verse 8. "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways." What this tells me is God doesn't reveal everything to us, but tells us enough to have the hope that all things work for good. So with this limited information on this particular subject, I would have to rely not on plain answers from Scripture, or not historical examples or references, and not what people think. I would have to rely on faith, I guess. I guess I can say this is where and why our faith needs to be strong. It needs to be strong because we're not trying to get to the answer. We're trying to get to the hope. We're trying to get closer to the hope. We are not good because we are Christians, and we are not Christians because we are good. Yes, we are believers and followers, but this journey isn't absent of our choices. We do not have to do anything. Christ says specifically, "If anyone desires me, let him deny himself and follow me." It's a choice he gives us. We get to choose whether or not we love one another. We get to choose whether or not we forgive. We get to choose how we treat our enemies. And that choice will shape and frame the foundation of our belief, our actions, our faith, and our attitude as Christians. Christ gave us the very example of how choice will shape our Christianity. To point out a very specific example for all of us, I'm going to refer to the Last Supper, just in reference here, where the disciples were arguing on who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom. And while they were focusing on that, Christ got up, took off his robe, got down on his knees, and started washing their feet. By this very act, we see all of Christianity. Love, forgiveness, compassion, respect, truth, goodness, community, and family. And by this very act, we see the greatest commandment at work, to love your neighbor as yourself, which in turn fulfills our purpose as Christians, to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Which still, we're allowed to choose whether we want to do that or not. It's our free will, which will shape us as Christians. Our freedom of choice is what makes our relationship with God not only a relationship to begin with, you get to choose to be in a relationship, but it makes it holy. To choose God, to choose His way, to follow, to choose Christ's example, that's what makes it holy. God gives us that free will to choose, but He doesn't give us the authority to choose our consequences. See, our relationship with God isn't about us giving back to God. That's not what it's about. It's not about us doing things to give back to Him. It's about using what He gave us to accomplish what matters most. And we have another great example of what matters most to God. I'm going to refer to the young ruler in Matthew 19, verses 16 through 26. And I'll read that, or it's up here for you. Now behold, one came to him and said, "Good teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life?" So he said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter into life, keep the commandments." So he said, "Which ones?" So Jesus listed them, and the young ruler said, "All of these I have kept my whole life. What do I still lack?" Then Jesus said, "If you want to be perfect, go, sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me." But when the young man heard this, he turned away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. What I'm referring to here is the young ruler listed all the good things that he had done and collected in righteousness to God. But when it came down to the choice, the only resource that mattered, that Christ presented him with, he failed. He didn't have it. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it because his identity became just a good person, a religious person, not Christ-like. He might have been doing good Christian things, but he was counting on those things that he had collected to be a Christian, to have eternal life. And remember, it wasn't just his possessions that he had to leave behind. If you really look at the context of that scene there, it was also his way of believing, his community, because all those things that he had done from his youth means he grew up in the church. He grew up with this way, keeping the commandments, keeping the traditions, keeping all that. He grew up doing that. His family, he sounds like a really, really good guy, so he probably had a really nice family, and Christ is asking him to leave his church. He's saying, leave all of that. Come and follow me. So it wasn't just physical money possessions. Also, if we know when this count was taking place, Christ was in the middle of creating his church, and his church wasn't in the synagogues. This young ruler had kept the faith and the law to the T, it looks like. And the things that he were doing were good. They were good things. They don't appear to be bad in any way. But all of that was nothing compared to what is good that Christ was pointing out and that he represents. There is only truth. We cannot perceive what is truly good except that which we see in Him. Following Christ isn't an immediate transformation. It's small increments. It's like a mustard seed. It starts out small, but then it grows. In our Christian walk with God, we are not looking for who does better, as the airplane example was. Immediately, who's doing a better job? Whose was awesome? We're not looking for how stronger our belief is, or our faith is, or our devotion is than our neighbor, both in this room and in our neighborhoods back home. 1 Corinthians 12:12. We'll go ahead and read that real quick. We'll turn there. 1 Corinthians 12:12. And I'll just read to 14. For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and all have been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact the body is not one member, but many. We all have our peace. Just as the airplane example was, in our faith, we focus not on performance, but what is right. Christianity doesn't show us how good we are. Christianity does not show us how good we are. It shows us how wretched we are as humans. We are awful creatures. We murder, we cheat one another, we lie, we steal, we hate. But you could say, well, no, I don't do any of that. I'm a good person. I'm a good Christian. Okay, let me lighten the load a little. We sin, both against ourselves and our brothers and our sisters. We plot. We scheme, even with the best intentions. We scheme. We judge one another to the point of breaking our bonds. We are selfish. Even with our faith, we are selfish. We have been separated so far from truth that our own search for what is good is completely meaningless now. God is truth, and He gave us the choice to either find and follow Him or be eternally disconnected from Him. He gave us that choice. We think in ways that are completely different from choice. As people, as humans, we think in ways that are completely different from truth. Even good things. As He said, my ways are not your ways, and my thoughts are not your thoughts. God gave us our own time and our own resource of choice to become our own people. Or His people. The Bible teaches us that there is no hope for us that lies within us. The hope is not within us. Good behavior and doing good things isn't what we depend on for our salvation. Good behavior and good things isn't what we're looking for to gain salvation. Actually, I'm going to touch on that for a little bit. Doing good things, good behavior. I'm going to give a little example here. With good behavior, good acts, doing good things for people. A very common display of a good act. Like example in here, I noticed that Sue Payne brings in, I think it's 6 bottles of water, just for extra water for people if we don't want to drink the little cup of water here that tastes like it's, you know, right out of the tap. So anyways, this is a good thing, just simple good acts. So a very common display of a good act is when someone ahead of you, it probably happened today, okay, when you're walking in this building, you walk up to a building, a door of a building, matching with someone walking with you, what do? Someone leans out in front of you, opens the door for you to let you in, right? That's a very common thing, it probably happened today. That's a famous example of an act of chivalry, right? We often use the word chivalry like, hey, that's a good act of chivalry right there, by opening the door for someone else, letting them in. Which got me wondering, because we all do that just automatically, where did that even come from? Opening the door for someone, where did that come from? So history has several different accounts, because at different times, in different cultures, it meant different things. But more recent one, well, recent, like, 400 years ago, in the late 1700s to late 1800s, women's dresses were so large at the base that they couldn't even reach the door handle when they went to like parties and events and whatnot. I don't know what it was called, and I was trying to find images, but they were too rough, and a lot of people own the images, so they were so large at the base that the gentleman had to open the door for them. So it wasn't even an act of chivalry or a thing of nice. He had to do it, you know, because she couldn't get in. And then other parts of history, like in the medieval times, it was part of their culture that the gentlemen would open the door for the women in castles and whatnot like that. But the perspective was because women were weak and they couldn't open it for themselves. So different historical one there. And then the other historical one was same time frame, like 1700s or whatever, when the man and wife were walking down the streets. The women typically had all the children in her arms and are all around her, so she couldn't open the door because she's holding, wrangling all the children, and the man's hands were free because he had to fight demons and dragons on the street. So he couldn't hold the children, so he would just open the door for her so they could go in because she literally couldn't. So it still wasn't a good act, it was just because they had to. Fast forward, now we do it is a good thing. It's a tradition now. It's something that we just kind of automatically do. We want to do that, right? And sometimes we even trade off, right? We tell them, no, go, I'll get it, you know? It's passing kindness to one another, right? Now that's known as passing kindness to one another. Which to me, that is a good example of how we like to compare good acts, it's a small one, but good acts and good things to being a Christian. But this act, even though it's a small one, didn't come from Christianity. This act of chivalry, if you will, isn't Christian-based. But still, it's a good thing to do. I see more and more people in my day-to-day that I don't know if they're Christian or not, and they reach and hold the door open for me in any place I go into. If it's not an automatic door, I have that happen all the time. Sure, you guys do as well. And I know for myself, I open the door for someone, whether they're a Christian or an atheist. Doesn't matter. Because it's the right thing to do. But I don't do that because I'm a Christian. I don't do that because, I do that because I want to do good things. I want to be a good person. You want to be associated with those good acts, and you want to pass it on. But no amount of good on this earth, no amount of opening the doors, will earn us the inheritance. And remember, just in our Christianity, just as we open the door for others to come in, there's always someone ahead of us probably open the door for us to come in. Take that relationship-wise, take that here in the church, whatever. Because God looked at the human heart and saw it to be hopelessly stained with sin. In fact, it doesn't even matter how good a person you are. It's nothing next to holiness. If our focus is truly on Christ and living by his example, we will be so busy that we won't even care if we're a good Christian or not. Because we don't look at it that way. Just as the scene in the Last Supper that we went over, everyone was focused on who's going to be the greatest while Christ was busy washing their feet. Doing good things, whether or not you're a good person or a Christian, doesn't compare to what Christianity is. And why would you want to compare it anyways? Christ said that we'll be capable of doing greater works in John 14:12. If you read John 14:12, pay close attention to what that scripture says. He who believes in me will be able to do all the works that I've just done, plus greater works than these, because I go to my Father. Sounds to me like a job position just opened. You'll be able to do greater works than these right here because I go to my Father. Sounds like a job position just opened up. by truly following Christ, we will branch out into works that we've never even dreamed of. Christ says, no one is good except he who has sent me. Being a good person does not make us Christian, and being a Christian does not mean that we're a good person. Just the status of it. And we can't compare the two. We may do similar things, but we don't compare the two. We cannot look at the good people that are doing great things in the world that we kind of went over earlier and say, well, they're not really followers of truth, so what they're doing doesn't really matter. It's futile. Can't really look at that and say all the works that they're doing, whether they believe in something or not, and discard it. We can't really do that. And we cannot look at the things that we have been shown not by right, but by grace, and shine a spoil light on the rest of the world. In 1 Peter 4:8 says, and above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. That is a big scripture. So in closing, true goodness is and always has been just out of our reach, or way out of our reach. The only thing that bridges the gap is God. By his grace, his love, and his plan. A good person and a Christian are completely different. We may end up doing the same things that are important to the world and that are good things. But as Christians, we recognize what good we are doing is not because we are good, but because of what God is doing and has done within us. Christianity is about God's love that he has for a broken people. And it is because of that love that we are called by his great works and not of our own. We all have the time and we all have the choice.